Mr. Mason?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. We're here on a de novo review for declaratory judgment jurisdiction based on facts set out on an amended complaint. I'd like to point out just three of those facts right up front, that JIA, the DJ plaintiff, intended to copy the defendant's product, and that product was advertised as covered by the defendant's patent. Second fact, again, alleged in the amended complaint, is that the patent...
Intended to, but didn't take steps to, is that right?
No, Your Honor, did indeed take steps to, but did not. It stopped short of infringement.
Got a price quote?
This is a very simple product. It's string with little parts of a screw and a nut around it. It's a $70 product, and that's what was in the complaint. We're not talking about a chemical processing plant where you need billions of dollars to prepare. It took what it took short of infringement.
But is the principle different?
The principle is that you do not need to infringe in order to have DJ jurisdiction.
But the question here, Pandora, has taken no action directed at you at all, has it? The record indicates none. Has there been something?
There has not been JIA, Steve, you are infringing. There hasn't been that kind of direct communication.
Has there been any communication between Pandora and you?
Yes, Your Honor. We would contend there is communication. The communication is that it told any manufacturer of this product that it is an infringement by two facts. One, that in its own advertisement of its own product, it says it's covered by the patent.
But it didn't contact you. That was just...
That is admitted, Your Honor. There is no direct contact. JIA, you are infringing. The second fact, Your Honor, is...
So if you announce, as you're supposed to under the statute, that you have a patent and you mark your patent, you're saying that's enough because you're announcing to the world, I have a patent. That is enough contact with you to require you to rush to the court to exonerate yourself from future infringement.
No, you're not. You don't know, Your Honor, that is not JIA's position. The second fact that I wanted to point out is that JIA took additional steps. It sued a third party under this patent for this product. And in that context, under all of
but
those circumstances,
right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But that's no action directed at you.
That is an action directed at JIA in the sense of JIA, any nameless person, if you manufacture this product, you will be sued. We contend that this product is an infringement. Now, do I have to say ABC company...
By suing one person, I have instructed everybody else in the world that I will be suing you?
On that product, yes, Your Honor.
Is that right?
That is JIA's position.
Is there any case law you have to support that proposition?
No, Your Honor. I think the logical consequences...
As a matter of fact, it probably goes the other way, that we assume you're not going to sue until you do it, right?
No, Your Honor. I don't think that is the case law. I think that if there are 10 manufacturers of a widget, and the patent holder sues manufacturer number 1, and then manufacturer number 2, and then manufacturer number 3, but never sends a letter to manufacturer number 6, I see no logical reason why manufacturer number 6 has to sit and wait. Either, in this case, not go into the business, or just sit and wait until he's been sued.
That wouldn't be this case, though, would it?
This is the case.
One instance of them suing one.
One or six, I don't see the theoretical difference, Your Honor.
And your client has taken no actions to infringe.
It has taken what it believes under the law to have DJ jurisdiction. It has not infringed. It has taken steps to infringe.
And what are those steps?
It has received a quote on a $70 piece of equipment.
Do you have anything more in terms of an established business? Do you have offices and manufacturing plants and anything which shows we're doing this?
No, Your Honor, they are absolutely not doing it. They're taking the steps short of infringement. Infringement is not required.
They didn't do it.
They did not.
And did not want to do it until they got the opinion.
That's correct, Your Honor. If they had taken the steps...
Let me ask you this, counsel. Isn't what you were seeking is really an advisory opinion as opposed to declaratory judgment?
JIA's position is absolutely not, Your Honor. Had JIA said it would like to produce a product that is similar to a product that has been accused of infringement, yes, then that is more of a theoretical.
You're asking the court, if we were to do such and such, and if we were to do it in this way, then would we be infringing? That's an advisory opinion, isn't it?
It is not an advisory opinion in the sense that the product is set and specific. It has the exact product of Pandora. It is the product that Bajul manufactured. It's the product that Pandora has accused Bajul of infringing. It is the product that Pandora has said publicly, if you manufacture this product, it's an infringement.
Yeah, it's not the product that would make it advisory. It's the word if.
You always have the word if because the court's precedent is very clear. You need not infringe, because once you infringe, you then risk treble damages and attorney's fees, and that is not the requirement.
By the way, why do you need to do this? Why don't you just wait and see what happens in Bajul?
Oh, because they all get settled, Your Honor.
What's that?
They all get settled. I mean, that's the typical DJ issue, where you have a patent holder that threatens and then settles. And if Bajul had indeed gone through a trial and been up on appeal, then there would be no reason, of course, because we would know that the patent is either valid or infringed. There'd be no case. It would have already been settled. The question here is, of course, that they are taking the same scare run tactics that the DJ...
except that they haven't scared you.
They haven't
taken a single step towards you.
They have, Your Honor, in that they have said, if you manufacture this product, you will be sued.
Have they said that to you?
Have you got a letter?
Have you got anything that says that?
They have not said it to ABC Company, but they have said it to the whole world. Again, we have set out a couple of hypotheticals in the brief. I just, again, logically, if you say that if you manufacture this widget, you'll be sued, why is it that you have to say, hey, Steve, you're the one who has to manufacture, I'm going to sue you? That you've told the world that you're going to be, that you're enforcing your patent against this product. If you have a different patent, a different product, a different company, but a third party that you've sued, yes, those are the prior cases. But to reach out and require the DJ plaintiff to have been contacted directly and specifically by name is something the Supreme Court precedent just doesn't support. It's an all circumstances test, and to require that the patent holder contact the DJ plaintiff is what JIA is asserting to the court that is not required. Again, as far as whether it is a requirement that you infringe, it's clearly not.
Didn't our Crossco case make it clear that marking products alone is not support for DJ jurisdiction?
That's not the issue I believe the JIA has raised. If that is indeed the case, that all they did was mark a product, we wouldn't be here. They have sued this product by Bajul.
Should we hear from Mr. Hansen?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Right.
Your Honor, may it please this honorable court. Good morning. Judge Blake in the District of Maryland correctly applied the MediUm test as adopted by this court, finding the first prong, which in this, using the overlapping standing, ripeness, just disability issues, we view and we believe the judge viewed as a standing issue. I think the court is exactly right. And in the Association of Molecular case that was vacated, Your Honor, but not on these grounds, was vacated because of the case involving the Mayo and the natural phenomenon, patentability. I understand, Your Honor, that the case has been re-argued. The order on the briefing had nothing to do with the declaratory judgment aspect of that case. That case was decided in advance of Judge Blake's decision, and it's on all fours. If the court didn't require some communication, what we would have is a situation where anyone could have a subjective fear. Now, Crossco tells us you can't have subjective, it must be objective. Now, Supreme Court said that MediUm, you can't have the apprehension standard anymore, but there still has to be an objective standard. If there wasn't, anybody could target a successful company that bases its success on its patent portfolio and decide, I'm going to hold you up because I'm thinking of building it. I've gotten a price quote.
What about the fact that he sued someone else? Isn't that a suggestion that we're coming after you?
Well, it's one of the factors. But I think the irreducible minimum that was found in the association case that I believe you also ruled in the 3M case, Your Honor, is there has to be an affirmative step taken by the patent holder directed against the person who would be the accused infringer. There is none here. We didn't write them. Heck, we didn't even know they existed. And in fact, they didn't exist before 6 weeks before they took us to the Eastern District.
Is that practical in a business sense? You have someone who wants to set up a production line of a particular product. They know they're copying your exact product. They're copying, and they say they are. Doesn't it make sense to find out, first of all, whether the threats you're making, or isn't it reasonable to find that the threats you're making to others also would be threatening to them?
Well, the way I understand it's done often, Your Honor, is someone writes a letter, makes a phone call. All the cases that I've read on this issue by this court, both pre- and post-Medioun, have that. It's never been this kind of issue. I think if this complete lack of communication is tolerated, we're going to have now a species of reverse patent trolls who are going to arise, like I suspect JIA did, in order to sue you, threatening to invalidate your patent.
So you're relying on the lack of contact by the patentee, excuse me, rather than the lack of action and preparation and infringement by the plaintiff.
Well, I'm doing that, Your Honor, because that's what Judge Blake found. She did not go on and find the second prong because she said, I don't have to under the controlling authorities. Since this is a de novo consideration, Your Honor, yes. The second one, the second prong, is the actions of the accused, the potential infringer. The first prong is the actions of the patent holder. Now, again, the Supreme Court and everybody uses these terms kind of mixed up, but I think the second one is a ripeness issue. Is it ripe for determination? Is it concrete? Now, getting a price quote as your only claim of concreteness is reductio absurdum. It goes nowhere. And again, if that's the standard, then the next reverse patent troll is going to have the subjective injury because they want to do it, and they're going to get a price quote. They're not going to have a prototype. They're not going to even be in the industry. Judge Reyna, if they were a real competitor and they wanted to do it, and they say, we're going to do it, what are you going to do about it? And they sent us a letter that puts us to the task. And perhaps so we could have ignored the letter. I've seen cases where even if you ignore the letter, a justiciable controversy doesn't arise. So, as the court said in Hewlett-Packard, the lower standard of Medioun is not no bar. It is a bar. There has to be a bar. If there isn't a bar, then we are going to have a monstrous situation on our hands.
Well, even Medioun requires a legal dispute, doesn't it?
It does, Your Honor.
Do we have a legal dispute?
Not in my analysis of the prevailing authorities. This is constitutional. This is Article 3. Now, the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts gives advisory opinions. They probably wouldn't on this. But the Constitution says our courts and the federal system cannot. There must be an actual case or controversy. The implementing statute, the declaratory judgment statute, requires the same. And throughout our jurisprudence, it has never been a subjective feeling. It has to be measurable. There has to be communication between the parties. Otherwise, it's a blind ambush. So this situation, Your Honor, is, I think, to put it, dire. I don't think the court has any reason to hold as being urged by JIA. Indeed, the court has held adversely to JIA. This is not, in my view, a reasonable application of MediUnion. This is, in my view, is not a reasonable application of any of the theories of justiciability, be they ripeness or be they any. It is a situation that, if allowed to go forward, would create a crisis in our courts. All I can say is I remember what happened when the court read the plain language of a statute with the marking. If the court opens the door now to saying if you can be subjective and all you have to do is get a price quote that you don't even have to tell anyone about, that you don't even have to have a business, then everybody is going to sue. And every big patent holder, be they Apple or Microsoft or my client, who's a very successful jewelry manufacturer, is in the crosshairs. So, Your Honors, we think this is an important case.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen.
Thank you.
Mr. Hansen, you have over 6 minutes. You need to use it.
Thank you, Your Honor. JIA thinks this is an important case as well. The scare tactics of what this court may do and what it might happen as the consequences, and to compare it to the false marking QI-TAM cases, I think is not particularly bad. The court determines what the law is. If the law is incorrect, the legislature changes it. And that's exactly what happened. Everybody did their role. Here, not everybody that gets a quote is going to be suing Microsoft. It's a fact-specific situation. You don't need manufacturing facilities to make this. You call, you pick up the phone, you call to China, you send them a string, a screw, and a nut, and you get back thousands of pieces. You put a website up, and you're done. You want to infringe or potentially infringe on a patent from Microsoft or Apple, you have a whole different situation. So it's fact specific. Reverse patent trolls, I don't really know what that term means. Again, I think that you have a fact specific situation, as the Supreme Court has said, an all circumstances test. I think that we have what the Supreme Court said was DJ jurisdiction, the dispute be definite and concrete, touching the legal relations having adverse legal interests. Clearly, there's a patent holder believing that this product is an infringement, and the person that wants to produce that product claiming that it's not an infringement or that the patent's valid, that it's real and substantial. Certainly, this is real and substantial to a patent infringement case. That a specific relief would decree of a conclusive nature. Again, if the prior case, the Bajul case, or any of the prior cases, would go to a judgment, come up on appeal, then we wouldn't have a case here. Instead, it's the scare tactics. The patent holder has no problem filing 10, 15 suits, settling them all. It chose to put its patent on the chopping block, so to speak, by suing Bajul and saying that this patent covers this product and I'm going to sue the manufacturer of this product.
This is a case of a hypothetical scenario that you were trying to get the judge to address?
I don't think so, Your Honor. It is a specific product. It's a specific patent. That patent holder has...
Well, that's true, but what did you have that was specific?
We had everything necessary prior to infringement. And the case law is clear.
All
you need not infringe.
Quote. Did you have more than a price quote?
Under these circumstances, I don't think anything more than a price quote is necessary.
So you were posing a hypothetical to the court and saying under this scenario, all I have is a price quote.
No more so of a hypothetical than any DJ plaintiff that does not have a product. And that is clear that a DJ plaintiff need not produce a product. The response was, I think, a quote from Sierra that the product could be changed easily, and so you're dealing with a hypothetical request. In that situation, it was not an attack on the pleadings. There was testimony that the product was at least a year away in design. It was 150,000 watt power supply. Here again, we're dealing with strings and nuts and bolts, technology that's been around for thousands of years. Under these circumstances, under the pleadings that we have to take as true, as said, they took concrete steps. Now, I certainly understand that perhaps on remand that Pandora is going to challenge that and it'll be a summary judgment issue or it'll be something on the facts. They have the right to do that. Whether they prevail or not, I don't know. The question, though, is whether there's DJ jurisdiction on these facts. If there are no other questions, Your Honors, I will relinquish the remainder of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Mason.
Thank you.